Welcome to 1514, a podcast of the Biblical Counseling Coalition, where we draw from the words of Romans 15:14 to encourage all Christians that they are full of goodness, filled with all knowledge, and able to counsel one another. I'm your host and director of the Biblical Counseling Coalition, Curtis Solomon. This morning with me, I have Eliza Jane Huey, who has recently come out with a book, Raising Teenagers in a Hypersexualized World, which is a really apt and important book, and it's always seems to be a perennial issue and always timely. So, Eliza, welcome. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself? Tell us about, a little bit about your current ministry and what you're doing there.
Sure. Thank you for having me. So I am a counselor, first and foremost, and I have been working at Life Counseling Center, which is a ministry of Chapelgate Presbyterian Church in Ellicott City area in here in Maryland. And I've been working there since about 2009 as a counselor. I do a lot of marriage counseling, but I also do a lot of individual women's issues, as well as I have actually even counseled older teens at the counseling center there. We have about six counselors on staff, and I really enjoy working there because we get the benefit of being part of the local church, but also touch the community in a very broad way. We serve several churches in the area that know that we have a counseling center there. And that's what I do. I've lived here in Maryland since 2008. We moved here actually the end of 2007. So we've been here kind of established for a good while now. We're starting to feel like it's home. We were transplants from the West Coast, so we've seen both sides of the country, and we enjoy it here. So yeah, that's a little bit about me.
I don't think I realized you came from the West Coast. Where in the West Coast did you live before?
Sure. So we lived in LA County, but we lived in the northern part of LA County in like the high desert area in a town called Palmdale, just kind of at the top of the 14, if you know the area there. So
I do. We're in California now. I've been here for about 7 years, and college down in LA County. So I'm very familiar with where Palmdale is. So very cool. I didn't realize that. So yeah. Tell us where did this book come from?
Yeah. So here, I had never really set out to write a book about teens, but I am finishing up a grad program. I'm getting my master's in counseling from Biblical Theological Seminary. And I have had to write a lot of things while I've been in that program. And one of the assignments was from a human development course where we had to pick a specific age group and write something very practical. And I really appreciated the professor just really encouraged us, write something that could possibly be used. And after I had written it, he was very encouraging to the product of what I had done. And that was kind of the beginning of it. It's changed quite a bit since that first assignment, but through a few editors and everything, I think it's actually better than when I first submitted it. But that's where it sort of came out of, and partially because that's where I was. I actually started writing this about 2.5 years ago, and my kids are now 22, 19, and 18. But at the time, they were all just in the teen years or starting to get on the later end of those teen years. And just talking with a lot of parents and realizing like this is a very needed topic, not just raising teens, but raising teens in light of the fact that they are bombarded with just sexual content from pretty much every avenue that they're going to have, whether it's their friends or their media, the entertainment that they have or the media they're engaged with. So I just felt like it was a very needed topic to write on.
Yeah, the book, I really enjoyed reading it. It's a nice book, and it's kind of, the way I put it is it's kind of a book for now. One, it's written for you. You mentioned it's in the book, it's written for parents who maybe didn't do a great job talking to their kids early on about sex and really kind of built that foundation over years of what is human sexuality supposed to look like? What does the Bible teach us about sex? And they find themselves in the teenage years with hormone-driven, sex-saturated teens and wondering, what do I do? So in that sense, it's a book for now. But it's also, I appreciated the conciseness of the book. It's a really short book, which is perfect for parents of teens, right? Because everybody is running around in 15 directions between school and ballet and soccer and everything else. Squeezing in time to read a 500-page book is not what most parents are looking for. And this is a powerful but compact book. So I really appreciated that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I really did want to have something where, I mean, I was in the middle of that that stage when I was writing it and recognizing there is just not a whole lot of time, but you are in desperate need of some real practical help. So good. I'm glad that's what I was going for. So.
Yeah, no, you definitely hit that nail on the head. Bouncing off that idea, though, you mentioned in there, obviously, and I love the fact that you start with Psalm 103 and talking about the grace that is afforded to all believers. And there's grace even for parents who haven't maybe done the best job prepping their kids for that topic. But what would you didn't really get into this in the book, but maybe how would you encourage parents to avoid that dilemma?
The dilemma of
running up, like not having addressed sex until your kids are already.
Gotcha. Yes. Okay. I wanted to make sure I was answering your question. Right. So, you know, that is, I think, probably one of the biggest things that I come up against is, even as I've seen this book start to go out, people said, oh, I wish I could have read this, 3 years ago. And it's tricky because let's face it, it's an awkward subject. It's awkward for the kids. It's awkward for us as parents. We're wanting to do it so well that sometimes we can kind of make the situation even more uncomfortable. But the key that I say to parents who are finding themselves saying, I haven't had these conversations with my teens, and I know they're, you know, seeing things and hearing things, to just be honest and transparent with them in that. That's why I actually start the book with Psalm 103. There's just a real transparency to the psalmist there. There's a disposition that I think parents can really grab hold of that need that we have. And so in light of that, you know, just being able to go to your children and say, you know, I haven't talked about this like I'd like to have, or I haven't had the conversations that I wanted to, but I want to have these with you, and I want to make them as comfortable for both of us as possible. One of the things I usually tell parents, whether you're talking about sex or any other difficult situation with your kids or challenging conversation, is don't feel like you got to cram it all into one conversation. Mm-hmm. Don't try to have all of those really intense moments covered in one talk. And I think that's what parents often will do wrong, is they'll sort of feel like we had that conversation, kind of check the box, it's done. But if you haven't had them, start with just little conversations that you can have along the way when you hear things or when things come to light, whether it's through conversation or through media or even broach it as, you know what, I know this is what you're facing. I want to be able to talk with you about it, and I haven't been as faithful or maybe even just aware on how to, but I want to start having those conversations. Kids are very understanding, and while that might be difficult, I think that starts to pave the way for you.
Yeah, that's really good. When I did a lot of work in youth ministry, so obviously sex and dealing with parents, and that's a big issue that people want to talk about and hear about, and parents are always asking about. But I almost wish it was something that children's pastors would start dealing with parents earlier on. Did you come across in your research and other things any great resources for parents of preteens or even children about when to start talking about that stuff with your kids, what's age appropriate, that kind of thing, so that they don't come to the teenage years and it's all just brand new?
Right. No, I know that's super helpful to have those resources. And I would say there is a resource on the CCEF website, and it's Julie Lowe and Lauren, goodness, what is her name? I can't remember her last name, but you'll be able to find it searching Julie Lowe. It's teach your children about sex. It's a It's a Journal of Biblical Counseling article. And that's just very succinct and just full of the questions that people ask, like, at what age do I start talking to them and how often and what do I say? In that article, they do a great job of covering the material well. So that's a good resource, as well as there's a book by... it is by Stanton and Brennan Jones, How and When to Tell Your Kids About Sex, is another one of those helpful resources. If you're looking for something a little bit more direct in like how and when, especially for those younger years. But one of the things that I would say, and I know Julie Lowe says this a lot in her talks that she has done, I've sat under some of her teaching on this, and she just says, talk often and talk early. One thing that I tell parents that is helpful in really any difficult conversation is when they do come up, to thank your kids for telling you about what they were thinking about. And it can be really hard to do that because you're not thinking, thank you. You're thinking, oh my goodness, now what? But thanking them and just letting them know that you are the person that they can go to talk about these things. So I would recommend those resources, and you know, you can probably from there find some other ones too that are helpful.
Yeah, I really appreciated you put that in the book, the telling your kids thanks, because you're right. That's the last thing on a parent's mind. They're probably just trying not to throw up or get over nervous. Yeah. Because it can be a really challenging topic. Another thing that you said that was really shocking, I think I highlighted it, circled it, starred it, was the phrase, teens want to learn about sex from their parents. And you actually wrote, you know, you need to read that again. Teens want to learn about sex from their parents. Tell, like, how did you come up with that? And encourage parents with that a little bit more. Like,
sure. That is actually a quote from, as I was writing this book, I actually read a lot, and I sort of found myself wishing I had read a lot more, a lot earlier, just like every parent. And one of the things, I mean, that surprised me too. I found that from a book, the Everything Child Psychology and Development book, some studies based on surveys done by teens showing that they want to talk about difficult things with their parents. And the thing that can get difficult is the teen years are kind of tumultuous, obviously, and they're full of hormones that send one conversation that was going well at one point into another place very quickly. But the truth is that despite those tumultuous times, teens still view their parents as a source of help, support, and direction. Even though they might not ever say that to you in those moments, they view their parents as that. And it was very helpful to read that, both from more professionals, but also just from teens who were saying that as well. It's important for us to remember as parents that they may not actually be saying it with their words, but they still view you as a source of support and direction. And so because of that, we have a great influence on them still, and they're really looking to us.
Yeah, that's a definite truth, just a truth that they are. And as parents, you need to be that source of information for your teens. You're their primary shepherd and teacher, right, and all that kind of thing. But you said they don't always express that with their words, and oftentimes with their actions, they even demonstrate this distance that they don't want mom and dad involved. But in reality, when they're honest, they have expressed that, no, I need, not only want, but I need my parents to be involved in this. And you had talked about disconnection in the teenage years is a real danger between parents and teens. And it's probably a fine line to walk, because you want to be starting to give your kids independence, and you know, they want to start spending more time in their room alone, or they want to be out with friends more often. You talk about the perennial problem that, especially as your teens get older, the time they want to talk is when you want to be going to bed. What are some things parents can do to actively fight that temptation to disconnect from their teens?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's something we have to revisit often, because I would say there's probably two things that I find that parents are facing that create that temptation to disconnect. And those two things are our busy schedule. That's probably one of the ones that most people can definitely relate to. I mean, when our children are little, we're kind of dictating how much their schedule will be packed full. But once they reach those teen years, you know, they're engaged in things where other people are now dictating what their schedule will look like. And some of those things are very important in their life. So we don't want to just dismiss them. But we're fighting against just the busyness of life, the schedules that the teens are facing, the schedules that we have as parents. And that's probably one of the easiest ways to begin to disconnect is just to say, there's no time to sit down and have a conversation with my teen. There's no time to even really sit down as a family and have, foster those moments of deeper communication. You have to fight for those times. You have to make those times. There's been a lot of times in when my kids were growing up where we did things that at the time it was like, oh, I don't have time, Mom, or here we go again. And, you know, those kind of little pushbacks here and there. And then when we got into the conversations or when we got into engaging, they really enjoyed that. And now I'm seeing as my kids are older that they're really creating those as well. And they're the ones who are starting to initiate those conversations a lot more, which is just really encouraging. So the busyness is one of the things that's going to probably be a temptation to disconnect. But the other thing that I find for parents is the reality that it is a hard and long job to be a parent. And there really is no stop point. And as we're seeing, the teen years are actually pushing into the early 20s as well, even though they have that 20-year-old marker on their age, they're still dealing with the same things that adolescents would be dealing with. And so you can start to get tired and you can kind of wear out. And so I think probably one of the biggest ways you can fight that disconnection is to really hold on to the promise of not growing weary while doing good, because the Lord is with us, and that as we continue to walk down this path with our children and shepherding them and walking with them and being a source of truth for them, the Lord blesses those things. He knows we're weary, but that can be the temptation to disconnect, both the busyness and just the tiresome task of parenting.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a long, and I really appreciate what you said there, that it never ends. That was one of the frustrating things for me in youth ministry sometimes, is the parents who got this perspective that once my kid turns 18 or once they're out of the house, I'm done. I'm free from this job. And it's not, you know, it's a lifelong, they don't stop being your children.
That's right.
Well, ever. So,
right.
We've kind of bounced around from my original plan of questions, but that's good. You really warn parents about creating an environment where sexual sin becomes an unforgivable sin. Sure. Could you talk about that a little bit more and how we can avoid that?
Sure. And I think that really does come from our reactions to situations that maybe our kids are exposed to, or maybe even our kids have been involved with, whether it's conversations or things they've seen or things they've even done. A lot of that comes from our reactions. And I talk about that in the book, just even giving some specific examples that may be things people can really relate to. Because the truth is when we hear about things that our children are facing that are difficult, we don't want them to go through, we don't want them to hurt, really, is at the core of it. We don't want them to hurt. We don't want them to experience the difficulties that sin brings, really. And so our reactions can be more out of fear and just the challenge of all of a sudden I feel very out of control in this situation. And so just guarding against that, because those first reactions can really speak to our teens as to whether or not we are a safe place for them to come. It doesn't mean that we don't hurt or we don't express the disappointment even of the situation, but setting it up as, and that's going back to why I started the book with Psalm 103, that the Lord doesn't treat us as our sins deserve. And so how can we incarnate that in the in those interactions with our teens in a way that that really does show that that our relationship is not over because they have maybe made mistakes or because they have engaged in something that that we wish they wouldn't have. And so instead of reacting, really being prayerful about how to respond, prayerful about what do I want to say, and I speak a little bit about this as well in the book, pulling on some other resources, that that we have an opportunity in each one of these situations, rather than seeing them as Paul Tripp says, rather than seeing those situations as interruptions, see them as God-given opportunities. And that really does change how we're going to respond to those interactions, because that will kind of speak to your kids as to whether what I just did is redeemable. And we know that we cannot step outside of that, the ability that God grants to us through Christ for redemption and forgiveness. So we want to communicate that in our responses to them.
Yeah, that's good. That's really good. We, I think we probably all have that anecdotal story of the kid who did X thing and mm-hmm. mom and dad, cut them off, shunned them, cut off mm-hmm. all communication, kicked them out. And they've been estranged for decades. And we really, that's like you said, we're incarnating God's love to these, to our children. And that's not thankfully how he treats us. He doesn't say, this is the line, you crossed it. It, we're over, it's done. So thanks. That was really, really helpful. Another pitfall that we do, and I really thought it was insightful the way you pointed this out, because I've heard, I've seen this in marriage counseling, heard it from lots of other counselors, that you get the young married couple, you do all their pre-marriage counseling, then they go off to the honeymoon, they come back, and there's just awkwardness because mm-hmm. their first encounters with sex, or maybe it's been a year or two, and they're just, they're having trouble in their sexual life because one or both are struggling getting over this idea that sex is bad, that sex is dirty. And I've heard that and seen that so many times, but I've never heard a Christian say, I mean, maybe some pretty extreme ideas, but most people, you know, your pastors aren't up there saying sex is bad, or mm-hmm. Your parents aren't out there saying sex is bad. But we communicate that in unintentionally, as you mentioned, that the only time we talk about sex with our teens, especially, is when we're telling them what not to do or how they can fail mm-hmm. in it, or how mm-hmm. messing up in this area will affect their life the rest, you know, whatever. I thought that was really helpful. So what are some of you give some tips in the book, and I don't want to give away the entire book, but what are some other ways that parents can talk about sex with their teen in a way that's not going to set them up to think that sex is sure. dirty?
Yeah. And I actually, before I answer that, I want to just kind of piggyback on what you said. And I remember sitting with a group of friends, and we were talking about this subject, and specifically as some of our kids are growing up and getting close to marriage. And one of meaning quite well, one of the bits of information that was shared was that they were encouraging their children that if you wait to have sex before, or wait to have sex until marriage, which is right and which is what we all should do, then your sex life would be blessed, and that you would be able to experience the joy of sex fully. And just as much as we can kind of set kids up the other way, like where you were kind of going, and I'll come back to that, I think we need to have an appropriate understanding, and we need to be able to, in the church, talk about the difficulties that do come. Because when that was stated, I thought, oh, that's a tricky thing to say, because that doesn't guarantee sex will be easy and sex will be fine because you waited. I would love to say that is the case. I think you have definitely a lot more advantage, even in working through some of the difficulties, if you have followed the Lord's direction in keeping it for the marriage bed. But the same goes for, as you explained, like we can create a atmosphere within the church that kind of says no, 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 which is right, because sex outside of marriage is fornication. We don't want them to, we don't want anybody to be fornicating. But the truth is that there's more messages about sex that I think is important that we don't leave out. And if when we begin to speak, especially to teens, about sex, it tends to be in the negative. I think we have kind of set up a wrong paradigm for that. And I think that's where you start to have that kind of thinking. Whereas if you can help them see the beauty of it in marriage and how it provides an opportunity for intimacy beyond just physical intimacy, so that if there are difficulties, we can talk about those a little bit more easily. I think that it's a tricky place to land in saying this is what it needs to look like in the church, but I do think it could help to have more positive conversations with our teens in even like a church setting, in there as they're going through their youth ministries, that speak to the fact that like these feelings that you have are actually God put them in you. They're God-given feelings that need to be preserved for the right place, but they're good feelings to have that attraction, to have those desires. So yeah, it's a little bit of a tricky situation, because we tend to be afraid to talk too positively about it to our children, because we think then that might incite more. But I think what we need to remember is like the Lord speaks to us about the beauty of sex in the scripture as well. So, yeah.
Yeah. I used to taught a class to our teens, and I had a female co-teacher who was a biblical counselor and our children's director for a while. And she just always put it this way. She said, look, sex was God's idea. It's a good
right.
thing.
Mm-hmm.
We need to remember that. And you mentioned that lady who said, you know, if you wait until you're married to have sex, then your sex life will be blessed. You mentioned that is a dangerous promise, because that could lead to some disappointment when it's not great. You know, they do have mm-hmm. problems, but that could also harm, go against that Psalm 103 theme that we're mm-hmm. talking about, because I think some people feel like, oh great, I blew it as a teenager. My marriage, my sex life, nothing from here on out will ever be as good as it could have been. And there's a, you know, an element of, yeah, you're bringing some baggage into the marriage, but the beauty of redemption is that yeah. even if you have fallen, if you repent and turn to Christ and pursue a godly life in his way, that your marriage, including your physical intimacy, can be a blessing and a joy. Well, there's a lot more to talk about in the book and other questions, but we're running out of time. So I wanted to take a couple minutes and just give people a chance to get to know you. So everybody, you'll just have to buy the book. It was released in the UK a couple weeks ago, and I think it came out last week here in the US. You can buy it on Amazon. Again, it's Raising Teens in a hyper-sexualized world.
Yeah, kind of a mouthful there.
Yeah. It was put out by 10 Things Publishing, or 10 of these publishing, which I thought was a really cool publishing idea, but we don't have time to jump into that. So we're going to ask Eliza some of her favorites, just so we can get to know her a little bit. Now, I have a 2-minute time limit on this, and however many we get through, that's what we get through. So on your mark, get set, go. What is your favorite food?
My favorite food. So my favorite food is anything that I do not have to cook myself. And probably the favorite food that I've ever eaten was, I really like sushi. And for my birthday last year, I was able to have sushi in Japan, and it was probably the best sushi I've ever had. So my favorite food.
It better be. That's great. What is the best gift you've ever received?
That's a tricky one. What comes to my mind is not so much the material things. I like the gifts that are more like memories. And so one thing that came to my mind was 2 Christmases ago, we decided to really about just a couple weeks before Christmas, we decided to kind of do a Christmas with the Cranks. And we went to Florida on a whim. And that was probably one of the best Christmases. We just enjoyed memories, making memories with each other. So, yeah.
Really cool. All right. Best gift you've ever given?
Oh, goodness. Best gift I've ever given. My hope would be that as my children grow, and this is kind of more sentimental one, but as my children grow, hopefully they have seen the gift that was given to me. And I'm hoping that it will be passed down as my faith is stretching out towards them. Hopefully that is something that they will find as the best gift they've been given. That's my hope.
What's your favorite word?
Oh my goodness. Okay. So this is easy for me because I'm reading this book called Reclaiming Conversation by Sherry Turkle. It's a good book. And I have used this word a few times in the last week. It's phubbing. And you kind of have to look it up. It's phubbing. Have you heard the word before?
I have not, no.
Okay. So I looked it up because I didn't know what it was. And basically, it is the act of looking at your screen while having a conversation and kind of ignoring the person. So it's an actual word, phubbing.
Which I'm doing right now because your timer is up, but that is a great word. I will have to, there's lots of opportunities to use that word nowadays, unfortunately.
Yes.
Well, that's a very cool. Thank you very much for joining us today. And I look forward to seeing what you write next and just hearing more from you in the future.
Great. Thanks so much.
If you'd like to purchase Eliza's book, you can find it on Amazon.com. Or if you live in the UK, you can buy it directly from the publisher at 10ofthose.com. That's the number 1, the number 0, ofthose.com. If you'd like to know more about the Biblical Counseling Coalition, please visit our website at biblicalcc.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at biblicalcc or find us on Facebook, facebook.com/Biblical Counseling Coalition. Thanks again for listening.